ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Let's cross to the UK. There have been some very significant changes to immigration laws announced.
Nightlife foreign correspondent.
After months of mounting pressure in the UK about record net migration figures and anxiety about the rise of the Reform Party, UK's Labour government's finally launching action to redo Britain's immigration system. The much-awaited policy is making big news world over because this issue of immigration, of course, is an issue. It was an issue here in our election campaign, wasn't it? It's an issue everywhere. It's laying the groundwork for a big shift in rules, regulations and enforcement of the border and visa processes as well. Let's cross to the UK for Rob Watson, who's our the foreign correspondent, political correspondent with the BBC World Service and a friend to us here on Nightlife. Rob, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Evening, Phil. It's really interesting. When I was hearing you talking about geography and which was closest to Australia, and you talked about Indonesia, I suddenly thought, you know, maybe speaking the same language, Phil, but you are the other side of the world, quite literally. I'm just talking about the geography made me think, hang on a minute, Indonesia, how far away is that from where I am?
Oh, long. Anyway, you Brits used to call it the Far East, Rob. Yes.
And yeah, you know, well, disappointed, it's still the Far East to me.
disappointed and you know, exam failing or vagrant students from your public school system were sent off by their families to the Far East to see what they could make of themselves and hopefully not come back.
No, I think if we were to start talking about that, I think both of us are going to end up in hot water.
Oh, dear, I wanted you to go first, Rob. Anyway, look.
I'm not going to go on this digression for long, but I've got two fantastic mates from back home in Oxford in England, and they all have, and they have sons who are in Australia right now as we speak, and the main worry for their wives is that they just don't think they'll ever come back, because they like it so much. And I think that is a concern for anyone whose young people go to Australia, that the lifestyle, well, you know, we've got some things that we can offer here in England, but well, lifestyle for young people, tricky.
I don't know. Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, although as every listener to this program knows, both of my daughters, of course, now live in London, so they've gone the other way. So London,
oh, well,
London,
balance is out.
Yes, exactly. London and the UK can offer things, of course, about being part of the centre of the world's population that we can't do from this end. But anyway, look, let's talk immigration. It was a big issue here in our election campaign, Rob, and it was in the United States as well. Sir Keir Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, has been under pressure on this issue, particularly from Nigel Farage's Reform Party, which made big gains in recent local and council elections. Anyway, he's promised to bring down migration numbers by tightening up the rules. What are the elements of the plan?
I'll tell you that in a second, Phil, but I'm going to try and put this in some kind of context. I mean, you said it's become a big issue here. I mean, it really is. I mean, I think it's been a big issue for at least 20 or 30 years, but I'm not entirely sure the politicians or the media had quite woken up to it. One of my colleagues, who I rather admire, the BBC's political editor, a guy called Chris Mason, I think he described the issue of immigration in Britain now as one of the biggest, what did he call it, sort of social science, social policy challenges in the last 20, 30 years. And that is right. So, I mean, to an Australian, this is going to sound odd because the foreign-born population in Australia is about 31%, I think. In the UK, it's 16%. But the difference is, you know, in the decades after the Second World War, net migration, the difference between those coming and leaving, was never more than in the tens of thousands, right? In fact, in some years, net migration was negative because lots of people were going to Australia. Mm. And then from 1999 onwards, it's always been in the hundreds of thousands. And you know, there's now something like 10, 11 foreign-born people living in the UK, 16%, as I said, of the population. And as you mentioned, Phil, Reform, you know, it's this one party absolutely identified. It's the only policy people know it for is being anti-immigrant, and it's doing rather well. So what has the Labour Party done? Sorry for the big preamble, but I wanted to put it in context of what a big story it is. Mm. You know, essentially what Labour is going to try and do is to cut the number of work visas.
Just back
they're doing some other things, yeah, but that's it, basically.
Just back on context, though, is I mean, this is also allied with the political antipathy to the EU, is it, which led to Brexit? I mean, is it tied up with that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, no in the sense that I think people have been hoping some of the people who voted to leave, that would mean, right, we're going to have fewer numbers of immigrants. But actually, immigration has shot up since Brexit, but just not of, I mean, I'm trying to think of another way of putting this, but basically there are fewer white Europeans and more people coming from former Commonwealth countries. So no in that sense, but I mean, yes, in the sense that I think it was once immigration started to get into the hundreds of thousands, which was from 1999 onwards, that a lot of people in a lot of communities thought, hang on a minute, you know, the country's sort of changing around me in a way that I hadn't quite thought, and no one really seemed to have consulted me about. So I think it's that speed of change, the fact that in 20 years things have changed a lot, whereas I suppose in a country like Australia where, you know, there's been a sort of constant level of pretty high levels of net migration. Maybe it's been less of a shock. I don't know. But I mean, certainly here, I mean, I looked it up before speaking to you, Phil. In the last poll I looked at, 67% of Brits said that they thought immigration levels were too high.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. You wouldn't get that same result here, whereby there's usually a small but measurable majority in favour of it, because Australia's always been, as you say, a country where people have come from all over the world to settle and grow and live a life here. And I think Australians recognise that, you know, through an official policy called the multiculturalism of Australia, and you know it's widely supported. I mean, it's an issue now in hard economic times. It's an issue everywhere because people see, you know, housing costs, for example, as allied with immigration and other things besides.
Same here. I mean, before I forget to kind of insert this, I mean, it's worth pointing out that even these measures that the Labour government is putting in place, I mean, they're thought to cut net migration going forward. It would still be over 300,000 a year, which is very different from the period after Second World War. And I suspect that there's something else going on here as well, and that is that, look, even if you were to stop immigration totally tomorrow, which obviously is not going to happen, that's just not going to happen. I think the polling and the anecdotal evidence suggests it's that the concern is not just about the numbers of people coming now as we speak, but I think there's also a lot of concern in Britain amongst the integration and assimilation of communities who are already here and who've been here historically. In other words, you know, this is a kind of a doozy of an issue. It's not one that you know lends itself to fixing overnight.
No, well, as you said, and I mentioned at the beginning too, it's there's a lot of political pressure on the Labor government, isn't it, and Sir Keir Starmer's government, because they, I mean, his popularity is not great if you measure it by the polls, and Nigel Farage's Reform Party has made massive gains in these recent local elections. So, what's he done? What's Sir Keir Starmer announced? Has he announced a massive clampdown, or is he making it slightly more difficult to come to the UK?
I mean, I think it's more the latter. I mean, the measures there are, you know, trying to squeeze the number of work visas, making it more difficult for graduate students who stay here to stay on them for work. That's going to be more difficult. The government says it's going to insist on a higher level of English language, but not just amongst those who've got a visa, but their dependents. I mean, those are sort of things nibbling at the edges, but really interesting. The thing that really stirred things up in this country, particularly on the left of his own party, was this line in his speech, which I knew when he said it, I thought, blimey, this is going to get people talking. He basically said, look, you know, if we don't get a control on, you know, who's coming and why numbers, he said, we're in danger of becoming, and here's the quotation, an island of strangers.
Oh dear!
And on the left of those on the left of the party suddenly, you know, were quick to say, "Hang on a minute!" It was back in the 1970s that someone who, I don't know if any of your audiences will remember, this conservative politician called Enoch Powell warned that white people, you know, risked becoming strangers in their own land. Now, Keir Starmer didn't mean it in that way. I'm not even sure that he even knew that Enoch Powell had ever used the word strangers in their own land in that speech. I mean, he meant it, I think, in the sense that that he genuinely believes that the sheer kind of numbers coming into the UK really does put a strain on social cohesion. You know, not to say that he's anti-immigrant, but that's the way the left on his party saw it, that this is, you know, this is bashing foreigners, you know, this encourages racism. So that really stirred it up. And of course, you can imagine the reaction on the right of the British political spectrum, Phil, which was, oh, look, mate, this doesn't go far enough at all. This is pathetic. So he got it in the neck from both left and right.
Is it going to do the trick, do you think? Not from what you're saying, not really.
Well, So the Home Office, like our Interior Ministry, they did the modelling of it, and they think that it'll cut net migration numbers by about 97,000, so approximately 100,000. Mm. So, you know, you're still talking about very high levels of net migration in this country. It'll continue to be in the hundreds of thousands for the foreseeable future. And we've never really, you know, had that debate in this country about, you know, what do you do? We've got an aging population. We've got fewer and fewer people of working age supporting an ever-growing number of pensioners. You know, that'll be me one day. And so, you know, you have to have a debate. What are you going to do about it? Do we have larger families? Do we kind of, you know, what do you do?
Mm. Yep, Rob Watson's with us, political correspondent with the BBC World Service. We're talking about the UK's Sir Keir Starmer's, you wouldn't say pivot, I suppose, but he's announced action to deal with people's concerns over immigration. There'll be changes, there'll be reductions in the number of students coming to the UK too. I mean, this is an argument here in Australia, in this country too, Rob, because it's widely regarded as a lucrative export industry here in a sense. To some degree, I suppose the same argument applies in the UK, does it?
Oh my God, absolutely, Phil. You betcha it does. I mean, an awful lot of Britain's universities, they'd be facing financial collapse,
yeah,
right? Without all these foreign students who, you know, I'm sure it's the same in Australia. They pay higher fees.
That's right.
So as my kids can go to university at a slightly cheaper rate. I mean, actually, the Labour government's ambition, and this is shared by the Conservatives, is not actually to reduce the number of overseas students, which is approximately 600,000. I mean, that's what they want. That's what they think that the country needs. But it's more about saying, if you're doing postgraduate study, you can't bring your dependents with you. So let's say you're a mature student, you've got wife and kids, that's being discouraged. You're being discouraged from bringing family members with you. And crucially, right now, let's say you graduate in the UK, you could stay on for 2 years doing other things, doing some work. But now the government is saying they're cutting that to 18 months. So it's all things not so much designed to, you know, to reduce the numbers of people coming here, but to reduce the time they stay. Unless, of course, they become fantastically successful and rich, Phil, in which case, come on board, guys and girls, you can stay. But if you're going to do a postgraduate course and you end up flipping burgers or, you know, making coffee, the government says, right, off you go.
Mm. Yes, it's interesting argument, isn't it? Given the contribution, though, I suppose, of migrant communities to Britain's political life. I mean, you've got an opposition leader and also the previous prime minister. Both from migrant communities. So, you know.
I was only going to say, you could say, because, you know, you're throwing up these interesting questions. You could say that, you know, the British government keeps saying, and you know, it sounds perfectly sensible, what we want, we definitely want the brightest and the best to carry on coming to Britain, whether they're from Australia. Mm. You know, if you're bright, you're this, yeah, great, come. But actually, one of the things that the immigrant workers do here is all the sort of jobs that British people don't want to do, right? So there's a lot of low-skilled stuff.
Yep.
They're looking after Britain's elderly. So, you know, one in five people in a care home, Phil, is from abroad. I mean, who's going to do those kind of jobs if we cut migration? I mean, it's just an issue. I mean, it's not to say that it shouldn't be done, but it ain't straightforward. But sorry, I interrupted you.
No, not at all. Just a couple of other things before you go. To Brussels, setting out its priorities for next week's Brexit Reset Summit in London. What's all this about?
So, if for those of you who haven't been kind of paying that much attention, Britain voted to leave. Why should you?
Oh, that old chestnut.
The EU in 2016. And my goodness, it was not a happy divorce. I mean, both husband and wife, if I could cast Britain and the EU that way, were really, really fed up. And so essentially the last 9 years, particularly under Conservative governments, you know, relations have been pretty tense and rather unpleasant between London and Brussels and the other European capitals. But the last Conservative Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, and now the Labour Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, are keen to sort of patch things up. And the Europeans are also keen for the mood music to be better, partly because, you know, both sides are thinking, hang on a minute, we need to get on because you can't exactly rely on President Trump. So that's pushing them together. And you knew there was a but coming here. But you know, despite all the warm words you're going to hear next week, and I'm sure that Britain and the European Union will conclude a defence and security pact, essentially that the relationship is still going to remain very, very distant because, you know, Britain is not going to rejoin the main institutions of the EU, its single market and its customs union, and that kind of restricts how close you can be. Mm-hmm. And frankly, Phil, the Europeans take the view that, you know, Brexit is principally Britain's problem, not theirs.
Ah, dear. All right.
being brutal.
this is despite, I think, a measurable reduction in the standard of living in Britain, which you can measure at around about 10 to 15% as a result of the decision. Let's move on. The Prime Minister's family home, just briefly before you go too, has been damaged by a firebombing. I mean, also a car, I think, that was linked to him as well. But somebody, they've been arrested. They've arrested someone, have they?
Yes, not charged yet, but it's been investigated by counter-terrorism. And I think the reason why this is serious is because, you know, the suspicion is this wasn't somehow kind of random, but that two properties, in fact, and a car some way linked with Keir Starmer have been intentionally targeted by someone. Now, we don't know the precise details because no one's been charged. But, I mean, it was interesting that Keir Starmer stood up in Parliament at Prime Minister's Questions on Wednesday and described these attacks as an attack on democracy. And fellow party leaders, Kemi Badenoch of the Conservatives, and Ed Davey of the Liberal Democrats agreed and saying, look, you know, this is not what we want. And, you know, in the past, Keir Starmer's home had been attacked by pro-Palestinian activists. So, yeah, I mean, it's this idea that you could be, you know, your personal, your property could be attacked in Britain for political purposes. It is a very, very big deal.
Yeah. No, indeed. Rob, it's always terrific to share a pint with you. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on, and sorry if I spoke too much. Common problem with this middle-aged man.
See you, Rob.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.